Okay, it's WrestleMania weekend.
It is. In Philly, which is near us.
That's right. And WrestleMania is a bit mixed this year.
Clouded. Let's just say clouded.
But you know what? We're going to keep with the wrestling theme.
This movie is also clouded.
Yeah, with a also very mixed tonally kind of situation.
Yeah.
I'm Erin.
I'm Tom.
This is Baby's First Watch List, the podcast flying through our last few months of pregnancy.
Yes.
And we have an awesome lineup for April.
Yeah. And I just posted it on our Instagram, which you can find us at Baby's First Watch List. It's on Threads at Baby's First Watch List. We're putting clips up on TikTok, YouTube. Yeah. Everywhere you can find us at Baby's First Watch List, and then on Letterboxd at BFW Podcast.
Perfect. Today's episode is on 2023's drama film. It's like a biographical drama, The Iron Claw.
Yes.
Iron's on my Google because I'm also anemic in pregnancy.
Yes.
So I've been taking iron supplements as well.
The iron flaw.
That's exactly what I'm going through at the moment. No gestational diabetes, though.
Yes.
We're, you know, I'll take a win where I can get it. This movie was written and directed by filmmaker Sean Durkin. This is his third kind of feature film that he directed. The first was Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
I think that's the only one that I know.
Yeah, that one I actually saw a whole bunch when people were asking online about like good thrillers.
Oh, cool.
And that's actually Elizabeth Olsen's film debut.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
In 2011?
Yep.
It was?
Yep. And it got very good reviews. So did his next movie, The Nest, which was Jude Law and Carrie Coon.
Okay.
I think it's like a period piece thriller.
Carrie Coon, Leftovers Queen.
There you go. And both of them got a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, and this movie has an 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, so he makes good movies.
Funny that this one has lower, and it's like his most acclaimed by far.
Yeah.
Like, not, you know, his biggest by far.
By
and it
far.
Wasn't that big.
Right. The cinematography was by Matthias Erdely. Don't know if I said that right.
Sorry, Matthias.
Who shot the Oscar-winning Son of Saul, which was a Hungarian movie.
Okay.
And it won for Best Foreign Language Film in 2015. It's a Holocaust movie.
Okay.
Only the second movie from Hungary to win Best Foreign Language Film. The music was by Richard Reed Perry, who some of you may know as a member of the band Arcade Fire. And so he did the music, which is pretty neat.
I thought the music in this was great.
Me too.
I mean, let alone the soundtrack, but the score itself was really, even in the positive moments, was very almost like dread imposing. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a really, really great score.
He also co-wrote the song that was written for the movie, which mm-hmm. was a very well featured, I thought.
Three times.
Yeah. And that's how a movie should be.
Best original song.
Best original song should be
featured.
And then the music, I think, was all from the early 80s, including what was Carrie Von Erich's ring music, entrance music song.
Yes.
Tom Sawyer.
Yep.
The movie stars Zac Efron in a wonderfully acclaimed role.
Yeah.
Mara Tierney, who is best known for a lot of TV. Holt, how do you say his last name?
Dickinson?
McElhenney.
Oh, McElhenney?
McElhenney.
Harris Dickinson, yeah.
Yes. Jeremy Allen White, Harris Dickinson, who you may know from Triangle of Sadness.
Yeah.
And then Jeremy Allen White, obviously, is from The Bear and Shameless.
Mm-hmm.
And then Holt McElhenney. McElhenney. He was in...
I don't know if I'm saying it right, but that's what I think.
He was in Mindhunter.
Yes.
And then Lily James of, I don't know, Cinderella fame, I guess. What do you know Lily James from?
Pam and Tommy. Was she in that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's good.
She was Pam in this, too.
She was. Pam Queen. Filming took place in Louisiana over only 6 weeks. And this is pretty cool. The wrestling sequences were filmed kind of in one take each, full-length matches.
That is really cool.
And it was with a live audience. Do you know where they filmed it?
Texas?
Well, no, in Louisiana, but in a furniture store.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Imagine them clearing out the gerunds.
Yes.
Bob's Furniture.
Get Bob out of here for a couple hours. We got to shoot this movie.
Is Bob still around?
I think so.
It's just Puppet Bob on TV.
They just changed the mascot from him.
Because he was a little too old to be doing all that.
Yeah, we got to preserve Bob, the mascot.
The movie was released in theaters in late December 2023, and it actually ended up making $43.2 million on its $15.9 million budget.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, it started at 6th at the box office, but it only had a 3% decrease in week two. So I guess word of mouth, you know, people talked about really liking it.
And no one's going to see a movie like this. Like, so the fact that it made $43 million is...
Well, it was out the same week as Migration. So. Oh,
yeah.
And Anyone But You, and I think the second Aquaman.
Yeah.
I think it was a big weekend.
Big weekend.
Well, Anyone But You made over $100 million.
$100,000?
$100,000. It also did well with critics. Like I said, it got 89% currently on Rotten Tomatoes. Special praise was given to the cast. There was a more mixed response to the kind of level of tragedy in the second half of the film, as well as the real life people and events that were omitted. And so it's kind of hard because those two things are opposite of each other, as far as like you can only... Like, some people were like, I hate how sad it was and how heavy. But then other people were like, well, I hate that they took out some of the tragedy.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, which way?
If you know the story of the Von Erich family, you know how sad. Even if you don't know the details. I came into this. I've been a wrestling fan. I haven't watched the last, like, few years. But, like, I was a wrestling fan growing up. One of my earliest memories, 1996, I think, WrestleMania 12, Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels, 60-minute Iron Man match. Like, that was my stuff right there. I knew about the Von Erichs, but they were obviously, like, long before my time. So I didn't know the full story. And if you include the full story, the movie's already 2 hours and, like, 10-15 minutes. Like, if you include the whole story, it's a 3-hour movie.
Right. Well, like, we'll talk about what your opinion is. And I'll talk about what I think as far as whether we would have added in some of the things that are omitted or not. And then finally here, National Board of Review, they named The Iron Claw as one of their top 10 best movies of 2023. And I know this is another question that I'll ask you, but it definitely makes my top 10 of this year.
Sure.
I think so. There's not a whole ton about this movie.
Right.
Of course, there's a lot of stuff about the Von Erich family. And if you are interested, you can definitely go down that Wikipedia rabbit hole. I know that there's a very acclaimed Dark Side of the Ring episode about the Von Erich family. And Kevin Von Erich, who is played by Zac Efron in the movie, he's interviewed. And I did a little bit of, you know, side googling and stuff because it's a really fascinating and tragic story. And Kevin Von Erich has spoken a lot about his life and other things that are missing from the movie. In particular, I remember reading...
And he worked with them on the movie, right?
He definitely went to the premiere in Dallas, and it was the first time he had been seen publicly in Dallas for 20 years.
Wow.
I don't know if he was involved in the actual production of the movie itself, but he went to the premiere.
Okay.
And
I just assumed he was because he's the main character. So
yeah. I'm not sure about it, but I will say one of the things I think I read somewhere that he also struggled with, severe mental health issues.
You think?
That at one point, this is again from me just kind of googling or whatever, but him saying that he was not sure that he was gonna make it through that day alive, and so he went into a gun store, and a person that was working there saw him and kind of like. He could tell that he was not in a good place.
Yeah.
And he just said, "Oh, love you, Kev," under his breath to him. And so then he left and then came back and just like talked to that guy. And that like saved his life that time.
Yeah.
So like it's interesting that he's very, very open about his own personal
struggles,
especially after all the tragic events of his family took place. So
I mean, what do you got to lose?
Yeah. So I would
say... That's the type of stuff we're dealing with in this movie if you haven't seen it.
Yes. So I would say definitely check out that episode or...
it's on Vice. I Viced it Dark Side of the Ring. I'm not sure where it's streaming, but I think it is streaming somewhere.
And there's a lot of different articles and things that you could read that goes more in depth about everything.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell our little...
Yeah, we'll jump into the movie.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the opening scene? So it's like... You see Holt McCallany, Fritz Von Erich, sort of being a heel. Mm-hmm. He's like cheating. He's screaming at the crowd. He's doing his Iron Claw. Like the Iron Claw is his like finishing move where he like grabs the head of the person and acts like he's like crushing the person's head. And then they go out, after the show, and it's him and his wife and the two of the kids, and they're just he bought a new car. He rented a car, like a Cadillac or something, and it's like he wants to become a bigger star, and to become a bigger star he wants to act like he's a bigger star, you know, kind of like better to look good than to feel good kind of situation. What did you think about the opening, because it's like in black and white and it kind of sets the stage for what we're gonna see after, like the opening, you know, with the title card and all that?
I liked it because I think that it the movie really does have this cloud over it of Fritz Von Erich and his...
He is the Iron Claw.
Right, and his sort of dominance over this family. And I think that getting that little moment of him in his quote-unquote prime is important to be able to kind of understand that, like, years later, why these kids... are so kind of under his rule, if you will.
And it also, I found him to be obviously like not a good portrayal, but I think it was a nuanced and layered portrayal, because in the beginning, in that opening scene, he's talking about how he wants to provide for his family and how they're living like paycheck to paycheck, like many, many, many wrestlers were and still are today.
Mm-hmm.
It's better now, but like you never knew if you were going to get paid. Like it was like one of those things with all those like promoters. And we have his motivations, and you can sort of you can look at the rest of the movie through the lens of like, he was like actively trying to make things better for his kids at some point, but at some point between that opening scene and when we start up our like real narrative, he is overbearing and has the family in like a vice grip basically.
And he also is someone who, it's very clear he did not achieve those dreams that he was interested in achieving, and now is kind of a dance mom, if you will.
Yeah, well, the whole movie he's talking about, we never had the NWA World Championship in this house before, and they promised it to me, and they never gave it to me, and, you know, I was up next, and then it went to somebody else, and then all that. And then, you know, a little bit of spoilers later on, when Kerry wins the belt, or is going to win the belt, he says, like, finally, it's going to, like, I'm going to have the belt himself, about Fritz. Like, yep. Everything runs through him, and he doesn't really have that sort of empathy for his children,
right?
Which of course we especially see later on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even in that first like breakfast scene that opens up, like after, you know, once we're into the main narrative, it's carries out like training for the Olympics, and then we have the five brothers. So there's four brothers, four brothers, because there's the fifth one, Chris, who was not in the movie. So there's Kevin, who is Zac Efron. There's Kerry, who is Jeremy Allen White. There is David, who is Harris Dickinson. And then there's Mike, who is an actor who doesn't have a Wikipedia page.
Who did a great job.
He was great. The actor's name is Stanley Simons.
And I think that Mike and Chris, the brother whose story was sort of omitted, or the character, their stories are kind of combined a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. So they're eating breakfast the one day, and Kerry's out training for the Olympics. And Fritz literally says, we all know Kerry's my favorite, then Kevin, then David, then Mike. And it's played for like half a joke, but it's not.
Yeah, he's
joke.
Like, and that could change at any moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And then a few minutes later, Kevin walks into his mom's, Mara Tierney's room, and she's like getting ready for church or whatever. And he goes, Mom, I want to talk about something. And she goes, honey, that's what your brothers are for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just no connection. Like, no, they don't treat their children as equals at all. And these are already grown children. They're already, in their 20s at this point,
mm-hmm.
for the most part. Then we get into some fun stuff where Kevin is doing like a wrestling promo towards, I think he's doing a tag team match, and he has a mystery partner who ends up being David, and it's David's like debut. It's his first match. So Kevin is backstage doing the whole thing with the interviewer, and he's flubbing his lines, and he keeps saying, "Can we run it back from the top? Can we run it back from the top?" And it's, you sort of see like Kevin's not quite,
he's not quite there on the mic.
He's not quite there. But I love that like backstage stuff. I think that stuff is really fun. That sort of like blows up the wrestling. Cause everyone, if you're a person that is like, wrestling's fake, you shouldn't watch wrestling. It's like, yeah, everybody knows wrestling's fake.
Of course.
Like, we know that this stuff, it's a television show. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing as a movie. So I love when they show that in stuff like that.
Wrestling cracks me up. It's, you always say about how Billy Joel is for people who don't want to admit that they like show tunes.
Yes.
It's like wrestling is for men who don't want to admit that they like telenovelas soap operas.
And live theater.
Yeah, exactly.
So Kevin ends up meeting Pam, played by Lily James, who kind of like alphas him into a date.
She did a good job, I thought, with this role, because it's not a super big role.
No.
But there's a lot of nuance to it.
And she doesn't really have, like, it's not that it's not written well, but she's basically the audience kind of whatever stand-in.
Proxy.
Yeah, because Kevin's kind of explaining the business to her and all that. But she adds, she's a little off kilter, which I think is a good way to approach this character, because she's not... She's memorable. She's not boring. Well, she's not generic.
And what's nice is there's no real drama with her, even when there is, like, Kevin's figuring out his own stuff.
Yeah.
Because, like, she just truly wants the best for him, which is, like, besides his brothers, it seems like it's the first... Because his brothers definitely do want the best for him, too. They really support each other, but...
Well, Pam, one of the quotes in the beginning is, they say... I forget who says it, but... They say, just being together, we can do anything. About
yeah.
All
and they have such a sweet relationship. All
four
brothers.
Of them. Yeah.
But Pam, you could see from it, it's like the first time someone from outside of his actual brothers that truly wants the best for him. And I think that Lily James does a good job of portraying that.
Yeah. So we get sort of a. Kevin gets a shot at Harley Race, who is the champion of the National Wrestling Alliance. And he's such a great villain for this story, because even if you know a little bit about him, like, he played such a great, like, bad guy over like the 70s and 80s. Like, he's one of those, like, greats that you've probably never heard of unless you're like a big wrestling fan.
I've never heard of him.
And I think in that match, when you have Kevin facing him, so he's facing him so that if he beats him, he's going to get a title shot later on. And I think that the match with Harley Race and Kevin Von Erich, like, shows exactly why I think wrestling should be treated as like a legitimate art form, because when Kevin gets like suplexed onto the floor and the whole scene like shifts, and it's like you get like that very like high pitched, you know what I mean, like in
tinnitus sort of
sort of sound, and then he's like crawling slowly back into the ring, and he's trying to beat the count of 10 to get back in the ring, and he beats it at 9, and like everyone goes nuts, and it's like, yeah, this was played for like wrestling and a show, and he gets in, of course, right
dramatic
before 10.
Dramatic effect, yeah.
But if you find out, he was really injured.
Mm-hmm.
The acting was like kind of not acting, and sometimes that is what you get when you have a thing that is so like, yes, it's predetermined, but it's not like, it's not fake. These right. people take real bumps. These people are in real pain.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, later on, they're talking to, they're having another dinner scene. All these family dinner scenes are like brutal.
Yeah.
They're so awkward. Mike, the youngest brother, wants to, he's like more of a music guy than a wrestling guy. So he wants to, what is he, 17 or something?
Yeah.
And he wants to go to the University of Texas for a gig that he has booked with his buddies. And, you know, Kevin's sitting there being like, and David are sitting there being like, you know, we'll take him. Like, we'll watch out for him. And Carrie's there too, I think,
yep.
at that point. And they're telling him no. Like, Fritz and his wife are saying, what's the mom's name?
Doris, I think.
Doris. Fritz and Doris are saying no. And it's like, Kevin Von Erich is sitting there. He's the Texas world champion of WCCW, which is their the promotion that Fritz runs. You look at him in front of a crowd, and it's like, this guy's the man. But then back at his house, his parents are still, they're not letting him take his brother. Like, they don't trust him with his brother, taking his brother to a concert so he can perform a concert.
Right.
And it's such a, like, drastically different dynamic from when he's in front of a crowd. But they do end up sneaking out and taking him to his little gig. And Mike sings the song, which is, what was the name of the song?
Something about living forever, being around forever or something.
Live That Way Forever, and
it's a good song too.
It's a crushing song because it's like when he first sings it, it's a just cuts to David and Carrie, who are watching him and like hanging out, and it's like all three of them are dead, like
within a couple years.
Within a couple hours, like within an hour. But then we get sort of, so Carrie was training for the Olympics. Jimmy Carter canceled, we're not sending.
Yeah, which I didn't know this.
Yeah, the U.S. didn't send Olympic athletes to the Moscow Olympics in 1984, I think, around that time. And so then Fritz was like, hey, Carrie, why don't you become a wrestler and hang out, go with your brothers and be a part of this whole thing with us. And so we get a montage scene where he's training and it's set to Tom Sawyer by Rush. And it's sort of a little bit of time passes. The three brothers are getting all bigger and performing together, and they win the NWA six-man tag team championship together.
I did see one criticism that said that this didn't really emphasize just how huge they were in Texas at the time.
Oh, like for anyone who doesn't know about like the wrestling territory business, like before it was WWE, it was the Northeast had a territory, which was WWWF, which was Vince McMahon's dad. Texas had the Von Erichs. Tennessee had the Jarretts. Like, there was, like, pockets of these people that were running these companies that were massive celebrities in that area, which is how Pam runs into Kevin. And she's like, I don't want to get this autograph from David or whatever. Like, I want it from you because I'm a fan of you. And, like, there are massive stars in their areas. So they win the NWA six-man tag team championship. That's Kerry, Kevin, and David. And, of course, Fritz has to get into the ring and take the microphone and talk about how the NWA had screwed him over. And now they're at the top, and they're all, like, hugging in the ring. And that's, like, the promo picture, I think.
Poster.
The poster. The five of them hugging. Like, that's, right there, like, that's the peak. You can feel it in the movie.
Yeah. That and then the wedding.
Right. But literally, directly from that scene, it goes into Carrie taking steroids. So, we mentioned the rankings, Fritz's rankings earlier. Then we get Ric Flair is the champion.
Terrible portrayal of Ric Flair, unfortunately.
We'll talk Ric Flair. And instead of Kevin getting the title shot at Ric Flair, they decided that it's going to be David because David is taking advantage of his, he said he's getting more heat, meaning that he's getting the crowd more riled up and he's better on the microphone than Kevin is. And he may not have the same look, or he wasn't the first, he wasn't the oldest, but he's the one that they want to fight Ric Flair. So it kind of like his ranking shifted. David is now ahead of Kevin. Then they're at the wedding of Pam and Kevin, and David's in the bathroom getting ready to go to his trip to Japan and to fight
he's
Flair.
He's throwing up blood,
and you can't be throwing up blood in a movie and expecting it to go away. You just can't.
But it is a sweet little scene because Kevin finds him and tells him that he's going to be a dad, and so at least David knew that.
Yep. And then you have all the kids dancing at the wedding, and Fritz is just like, Fritz and Doris are just like watching them, like criticizing them.
Yeah. When Doris says something about Pam, so rude.
It's so symbolic of their relationship, though, like making all the kids dance and then tell them, and then, talking about how they're not good enough and don't live up to what they were looking for. So the next scene, we have Kevin walking into Fritz's house, and Fritz is just at the dining room table, and he just says, you know, David died in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
It was like enteritis or something like that. And they have his funeral, which is the first funeral in the movie. And Fritz comes up to Carrie and Mike and tells them to take their sunglasses off. And he's
stop crying.
No crying, no hiding. Like, we got to show the world that we're strong, which is just so toxic.
Mm-hmm.
But next, we do have Ric Flair comes to Texas to face Carrie
mm-hmm.
for the NWA championship. And I thought that the way that they filmed that was really, really cool. So they do the Ric Flair promo. And, like, I think the actor's mannerisms were okay for Ric Flair, but he...
The voice wasn't there.
The voice wasn't there, and Ric Flair was better. Like, Ric Flair is just, like, I mean, say what you want about the person, but Ric Flair, the performer, is, like the greatest of all time when it comes to, like, the microphone. So, mm-hmm. like, you got to have somebody who could match that energy, and this, I don't think this guy really matched that energy. But instead of showing the match, they showed Doris watching the match on TV, mm-hmm. and Pam, I think, was there too, watching the match on TV, and it's like Carrie and Fritz, by extension, are like having this huge moment where Carrie wins the NWA title, and what we as the viewers see is just the silence at home, and then it like pans over to the tree where I guess it's inferred that like had something to do with David, whether he's buried there or whatever. And it's a very quiet moment when in reality for Carrie and for Fritz and for the Von Erichs in general, like it was such a peak of the mountain moment. I really liked that choice. It almost made it feel like nothing mattered without David, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Then Kevin talks to Carrie, who's, you know, looking at the NWA title belt, and he's like, I can't believe we finally got it. But you could tell he's like not enthused. Mm-hmm. Like
he doesn't care
again because of David, I'm sure.
Yeah,
like so he goes out, and of course Carrie gets into a motorcycle accident and he loses his leg below, like from the ankle down.
Mm-hmm.
And now, okay, so with that, I'm pretty sure that didn't happen until later, so like it's framed as if it happened like right when he won the belt, but I'm pretty sure like he had,
well, he also didn't lose his foot right away. He tried to walk on it too soon, apparently, after surgery, and then that led to the amputation.
Okay.
So it's a whole thing that they didn't include.
Yeah, I think this happened like 2 years after he won the title.
Sure.
But so now we have David gone, we have Carrie who can't wrestle anymore, and we have Mike, the musician brother, who now wants to get into wrestling And it does not go well. He goes into a coma after he gets like shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
Like he comes back and does a little press conference.
It's not good.
And he's like, oh, I'm hoping to get back in the ring soon. And it's like, but the movie works so well, like on just dread that, you know, he's not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's not coming back in the ring. Then we have Mike, singing that song again, where he's like by himself in his room, and it's like intercut with Kevin and Carrie. Carrie's trying to get back in the ring. Like he's got his like leg in a boot, and him and Kevin get into like a real fight as Mike is singing Live That Way Forever again. And then so Mike walks out into the sort of just the wilderness and on the family property, and he overdoses. All right, there was an overdose. Or they didn't say.
He dies.
So we have maybe like one of the standout scenes in the movie where Doris is standing there and she's looking at the black dress on the bed, mm-hmm. and she's just like,
that's my favorite scene.
She's just like, they'll recognize it. I can't wear this dress,
mm-hmm.
because she's already done this.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's like, I need to get a new dress.
Well, it's really, to me, I really like the symbolism of that being her uniform.
Yeah.
And her costume,
ring
almost.
Attire, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it being kind of in contrast to the flashy attire that the boys have had to wear this whole time.
Yep.
And for her, it's that black dress.
Yep. We get another. We get a Ric Flair versus Kevin Von Erich match. It's another one that kind of blurs reality because Kevin, again, off the losses of his two brothers, and he's seeing Carrie struggling. He like attacks him in the ring, and he's like doing the Iron Claw on him, and he gets disqualified because he was, you know, breaking the rules. And you then see him, and it makes it look like it's him really snapping. And I think to some degree it was, because Fritz in the locker room was like, what was that? Like, what are you doing? But then Ric Flair comes in and he was like, hey, that was great, pal. Like, we loved it. I'll come back here anytime. You can have a title shot whenever. Mm-hmm. So like it blurs reality again, where it's like, yeah, he is feeling these emotions and he is angry and he does want to take it out on somebody because he has this toxic upbringing and he does it in the ring, but he does it in a way that is not actually hurting Ric Flair. And Ric Flair is like, he's a showman. Like, he's like, that's a great story. Like, you channel your emotions in the same way that an actor might channel their emotions on in a movie or a TV show. Like, it's such a, I think that the portrayal of the way that each of the matches like blurred reality in different ways was a really respectful way to portray wrestling.
I agree.
So Kerry's then in the WWF and he wins the Intercontinental title at SummerSlam, whatever year it was. And he comes home for Christmas, and it's a bad kind of Christmas, but it's not as bad as his Christmas in the Bear.
Yeah, that was bad.
And then, of course, you know, a few scenes later, he takes his own life as well. He had given Fritz a specific gun for Christmas, and Fritz didn't want to shoot it off. And like, they had a fight about him, about Fritz not wanting to shoot the gun, because Kerry says, you know, it's bad luck if you don't shoot a gun when you get it, which I'm not a gun culture guy, so I don't know any of that.
I don't know.
So a few scenes later, Kerry's on the phone with Kevin, and
yeah, it's a sad scene.
Not doing well mentally, and Kevin calls up Fritz and says, hey, can you just keep an eye out for Kerry? He's not doing well. And Fritz is just like, you do it. Like, you're his brother, which is just like such a messed up.
Reminiscent of the scene of what Doris said to Kevin earlier.
Yep. And so Kevin ends up finding Kerry under a tree at the family ranch. And he shot himself presumably with the gun that he gave to Fritz, which I think was real.
Yeah, it wasn't real that the exact timing of
the timing, because the timing makes it seem like it was right after Christmas.
But also just like with Kevin pulling up and then that's not real either.
So Kevin pulls up and sees him, yeah. And then he puts him on the dining room table, and then there's a little bit of like a dream sequence that Kevin is kind of like imagining.
Well, even before then, though, Kevin fights with his dad.
Oh, right. Because Fritz comes up and he's like, look what, you know, you let this happen. And then...
Well, and apparently... test audiences got a little different thing where Fritz said, I wish it was you, to Kevin.
No, they didn't need that.
Which apparently led to gasps in the audience, and then they cut it.
They didn't need that.
Yeah.
Kevin attacks him and he is like strangling him, and he eventually lets him go. But then he takes Kerry's body and puts it on the dining room table in the Von Erich home. And he sort of visualizes Kerry... earlier in the movie, when they decided who was going to face Ric Flair first, they did a coin flip. It was between Fritz did a coin flip to see if it was going to be Kevin or Kerry. Ended up being Kerry. So in this little dream sequence, Kerry, he's on a boat and he's going across the lake, and he sees David and Mike out there, and eventually Jack Jr., who was Fritz's oldest son, who died when Kevin was 5 and Jack Jr. I think was like 6.
Yeah.
And so he puts Kerry puts the coin down. It's very reminiscent of like Greek mythology, like when you cross the river Styx or whatever, and Sharon, who's the boat driver, you have to pay.
Is that really her name?
Huh?
Sharon?
No, it's a C. It's like Sharon. It's C-H-A-R-O-N.
I just imagine someone like shit named Sharon being like, all right, hon.
Sharon, it's a guy, first of all. He's the ferryman who transports the dead across the river. It's not Styx. It's Acheron to the underworld. And you have to pay to cross. You got to pay to cross to the afterlife.
Well, Sharon's not going to let you go for free.
Exactly. So it was very reminiscent of like Greek mythology. And then he gets out and they're all kind of like, hanging out, and he's picking up his older brother who's 6 years old and like holding him.
Yeah.
You know,
it's very sad scene.
Yeah. What did you think of that scene? Like overall?
I liked it. I found it to be, not too
sappy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the thing I like about it is that it's from Kevin's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's, he's coping. Like, he's
exactly,
he's figuring out a way to cope, and his way of coping is like, hey, I'm gonna, you know, a few minutes after this, he says to his kids, like, I used to be a brother and I'm not a brother anymore. And like, that is like, whew. But it, that scene where he watches them sort of meet in the afterlife is him sort of coming to terms with himself and coming to terms with the fact that this is tragedy,
mm-hmm.
but they're all together, you know? And that's how, that's what the use of religion in the afterlife is for a lot of people.
Yep.
Well,
and what's crazy is in real life, there was a whole other brother that died by suicide before, after Mike, but before Carrie.
Yeah.
Like, that is so crazy.
Yes. So they sell, Fritz had signed the WCCW over to Kevin. Kevin now sells it. And
he does it for his family, for Pam and his two boys.
For his family. And in the end, we see his kids playing football. There was an earlier scene where the Von Erichs are playing football and Fritz was like criticizing some of them and like pitting them against each mm-hmm. other. But in this one, he's just watching his kids play much more innocently. No expectations, no judgment. They come up, he just starts crying and they come up to him and they're like, why are you crying, Dad? And he's like, because I'm not a brother anymore or whatever. And they're like, we'll be your brothers. Like, and then can we go play football? And then they just kind of toss the pigskin around and
Pam comes out.
Yep. And then we get the black screen, white text.
Always.
They couldn't help themselves.
But it was like happy.
Yeah. Well, white it was text. Like now there's a huge Von Erich clan.
He had four kids and then 13 grandkids, which 13 is always an unlucky number, but right. I guess it's the lucky number now.
Right.
And they all live with Pam and Kevin.
Yes. On the ranch.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the Iron Claw. It was great.
It was great. Very good. So my first question to you, why do you think the movie was called The Iron Claw? And do you like the title?
I do like the title. It's an iconic thing that the Von Erichs were known for. They all did it. You know, there was all like a lot of them used it as their finishing move. And the first of all, there's two things here. The finishing move is so important in wrestling. It's like almost part of the wrestler's personality.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, it is the grip that Fritz had on this entire family.
Yeah.
It's even Mike. Like Mike was the one. Mike and Carrie, who were both out of it. Carrie was doing the Olympic thing. Mike was doing his music thing. They could not get out of it for reasons outside and inside their own control.
And then there's also the whole thing throughout the whole movie about being unlucky and cursed.
Yeah, the whole movie is sort of clouded by the family curse.
Right. And so that's an interesting thing that they don't really go into detail of. I read an article, I don't know if it was Variety or something like that. And so what they don't include in the movie is that Fritz originally took on, when he took on the name Von Erich, it was for a persona of a Nazi officer.
Yes.
And so the big rumor and superstition around it is that like everyone in when bad things started happening to the family, that it was the ghost of a Holocaust victim who had seven sons die, and that they would curse this family until there were seven sons that were killed.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that was like this superstition in Texas at the time when all of this was going on. So it's interesting that they chose not to include that in the movie.
I think it would have fit right in with Fritz's sort of personality in the movie.
Very much so. And I mean, Fritz was a heel. Like he.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it wouldn't have been seen in a positive light that he would have done this. It would have fit with his character.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it's interesting that curse also was that Iron Claw.
Yes.
But that they didn't go into detail about that.
Yep.
Well, and that kind of leads me into, I think, one of the biggest questions here, which is how you feel about the omissions in the movie. So here's a couple of them. Number one was the background on the Von Erich stage name and how that was chosen that I just discussed. There was an entire brother, Chris, who was omitted from the film, and his story was kind of combined with Mike. Or I think, was Chris the youngest?
He might have been
the youngest. And so he was super small. And
yeah,
so,
he didn't have the look.
Exactly. And so he really wanted...
He also had an issue with his body where he He had like asthma.
Yes.
And he had taken like a bunch of painkillers or something when he was growing up, and his bones were super brittle.
Right.
Which you kind of see with Mike.
Yeah, they kind of...
When he breaks his shoulder.
Exactly. They kind of combined those ideas, those different stories together.
But he was only 21.
Yes, when he died. And so that's a whole separate brother. They also took out other family members who had died. Doris had a brother who had died.
David's daughter.
David had a daughter who died very, like, at a couple weeks old. And they also omitted basically all the brothers in the movie had wives.
Yeah.
And most of them had kids.
Yeah.
They didn't include any of that in there. And then they also did not talk about how Jack Jr. died.
Right.
He stepped on, like, an electrified, the thing that connects the... like a trailer to a car or whatever.
Yeah.
And then drowned. He fell into melting snow.
Jesus.
And he was like six.
Yeah.
And so they don't include any of that in the movie itself. And I know that the director had mentioned that, like, it was for the purpose of the movie.
Yeah. He said he tried to kind of be objective about these people as movie characters. He was like, right. As a fan, I would have included everything.
Right.
But as a writer and director, I have to make choices that I don't necessarily want to make, but are going to serve the movie. And he thought that especially adding Chris's death and Chris as a character and his death would have just made it, like, not redundant, because that's really terrible to say about Chris's life. He's a real person.
Right.
But like, what does it add?
Compounded tragedy.
It's just, it's over the top tragedy.
Right.
It's like, it's so absurd that it's hard to even make...
Stranger than fiction,
it's,
almost.
Exactly. Yeah. It's hard to even make it into a movie because it's so messed. It's so dramatized that it's hard to make it into a drama.
You have to de-dramatize almost. Yeah.
In some ways.
Again, not that the real life thing is... like, it's a
No. But if we're talking about tragedy as art...
Right.
Like, it is.
Right. How do you feel about those omissions?
I mean, I think the movie's great the way it is. I don't know if Chris would have... I mean, of course I would have liked to have seen all of the Von Erich brothers in the first half. Because I'm sure the first half would have been, like, fun as it was. The first half of this movie
is
fun.
It is fun.
But I don't know how it would have landed. It's like another one. You know what I mean? Like, again, just from a viewer's perspective, not from a humanist perspective this person deserves to have his life put into this movie because it's his entire family except for him. I don't know. I think I got to trust the writer on this one. But I can totally see the criticism on that. And had there been another cut or another whatever with the other brother, I would have watched that too. And I'm sure I would have liked it just as much.
I like the idea of it maybe working a little bit better as a mini series.
It 100% would have been a great
where
miniseries.
You can then include everything that happened in this family, because I do feel like it. I wish that every family member was represented.
Of course.
And I find that some of the other background things are important to really understanding that curse and everything to do with that. I also think you could get more into the Texas setting and the background surrounding their celebrity. And I think that you could also avoid the extreme tonal shift in the movie, because it does feel like it's like, oh my gosh, which is purposeful, I'm
100%
sure.
Purposeful.
But if you spread it out, you maybe could ease into it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And
the second half of the movie is like, here's a death, here's a wrestling match, here's a death, here's a wrestling match, here's a death.
Right. And so that's I also wanted more from Maura Tierney's character. Mm-hmm. I found her super fascinating. And you could also have a couple more scenes about Fritz and his, like, why he is the way, like, I feel
you could
like
do a whole episode just on
you
Fritz.
Could do a ton of different things with that. So I feel like as far as the movie is concerned, I really enjoyed it. But if you were to put everything in there, turning it into a miniseries
100%.
Would have been awesome.
I totally agree on that.
Okay. So connected to that, what are your favorite and least favorite things about this movie?
I mean, it's hard to go against the performances.
They were so great.
Everyone top to bottom.
Every single one.
Like.
Besides Ric Flair.
Besides the guy who played Ric Flair. Sorry. I mean, just Zac Efron's the headliner, you know? Like,
he was amazing.
He was amazing. I think it sucks that it came out so late and that they were already, you know, late into Oscar season and that they were... A24 was focused more on the Zone of Interest and Past Lives, which it had already put a lot of kind of resources into.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of neglected the Iron Claw. And I wish it hadn't, because Zac Efron should have been nominated for Best Actor. I think he got an argument for Jeremy Allen White or Holt McCallany or Harris Dickinson.
And Maura Tierney.
I was going to say as supporting actor. Maura Tierney has an argument for Best Supporting Actress.
Mm-hmm.
It has an argument for a screenplay. Like, I think that this movie was top to bottom great.
Definitely for original song.
Original song, too, yeah. I think that this movie was great overall. Like I said, I liked the way that it portrayed wrestling, which is kind of a question that I had a little bit later on. I think it's like, in a lot of these movies, like in The Wrestler, it blames the business. It blames wrestling in a lot of ways. And for a lot of people... wrestling was not good for them.
Mm-hmm.
Some people should
still
not.
Still isn't.
But I think that this movie does a great job of sort of looking at it from an objective perspective. It's like, this happened in wrestling, but it's not necessarily a wrestling story. It's a family story.
Right.
Wrestling is just the background and the context. And that's why I think, even if you're not a fan of wrestling, even if you don't like it at all, you think it's stupid, you think it's whatever, this movie is still worth watching because it's not about wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just, I just love the way that it used wrestling to sort of advance the relationships and the narratives and all that. As for least favorite, I mean, it's a tough watch.
It is,
but there's no way to get around the Von Erich story without it being a tough watch. The other thing is, I guess, just kind of like you said, the fact that we could have had more background on some of the like Fritz and all that just wasn't really there. And I think if I wasn't already familiar with them vaguely, that I don't know if I would have gotten the same effect out of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
So besides the performances, which I think were amazing, one of my favorite things, I just like that there were many different themes that were laid out in interesting ways. So, for example, you know, for toxic masculinity, but masculinity in general.
Yeah, that's such a buzzword now.
It is. Yeah. But masculinity in general, I think that they did a really nice job of flipping the expectations on its head, where you have these traditional masculine kind of head of household patriarchal values shown in Fritz's character.
Yep.
And that is reminiscent in also their line of work, where it's all about being the big, tough, strong guy, showing no emotions besides anger and, you know, beating people up and all that. But really, these characters are seen as boyish, naive, innocent, sweet, and lovely to each other.
Yep.
And I really like the way that was in the movie, showing how they were sensitive and them not being allowed to show that vulnerability and sensitivity really affecting them.
Well, and also the fact that this vulnerability and sensitivity and its expression among the brothers is a trauma response.
Right.
To the fact that they're not allowed to show it to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, you know, it's a positive trauma response because, like, they're not bad to each other. They're great to each other.
Mm-hmm.
They love each other. They're all equals, you know? They have their own roles. They have their own kind of, like, you know, points of contention, but they all love each other.
Yeah.
And they all are allowed to show it to each other only.
Right. I also like that the idea of fate versus free will.
Yes.
Is in it. Exemplified by Kevin kind of choosing to step away from this business, choosing his family and choosing to raise his family in a very different way than Fritz did with his. And I also really like this juxtaposition between Kevin's professional life and his personal life, showing like his best times in the ring were when he was in a tag team match with his brothers.
Yes.
Right. And that he now is doing that same thing in his personal life by raising his kids with his tag team partner.
Right.
And so that being what he focused on rather than the negative aspects, I think was really interesting.
And the fate versus free will point also juxtaposes with wrestling being predetermined.
Yeah.
It's, you know, every match, you know, every result in every match is fated in a way because you have the person controlling it and you have them deciding what's going on. And every now and then in real wrestling, somebody goes off the cuff. Somebody, especially back in the day, like people would change the results of the match, like,
or get hurt
and they would get in trouble and like people would quit in the middle of shows. Like fate versus free will was a thing back in the 70s in wrestling, but like, now, and this was the 80s, so in the 80s, but like, here we get fate. We have the Iron Claw, also fate, kind of dictating what's going on in these kids, really kids, lives, you know, all the sons. And instead, we get the one who broke free, mm-hmm. the one who wasn't stopped by Jimmy Carter from going to the Olympics, the one who wasn't, you know, who didn't feel like he needed to jump in the ring because his brother died and his other brother lost his leg. We got the one guy who if he didn't, he did, it does seem like he figured it out per se, mm-hmm. but like we get the one guy who made it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it really was a great sort of fate versus free will type of movie.
Agreed. So how would you compare this to other awards contenders this year? This obviously did not end up, there was some buzz, but it didn't end up getting any nominations for the Oscars or the Globes or anything. How does it compare to the movies that did?
I think it's a missed opportunity that this one didn't get any. This is the exact type of mid-budget movie that Cord Jefferson was talking about when he won for Best Original Screenplay for American Fiction. It's a movie that is a small story, regardless of the pomp and circumstance of wrestling or whatever. And Zac Efron's a big star. But it's not a big movie. Jeremy Allen White's a big star at this point.
Yeah.
It's a movie about, you know, six people, essentially, seven people. It's a relatable story. This is like my favorite type of movie where it's like, it's a very specific context, but it's very broad and generalized themes. And it really hammers through using the context.
Mm-hmm.
How generalized these themes are. And it's like, not everybody has a dad who's that overbearing.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody has a mom who is like so religious that like she can't take like certain content. You know what I mean? Like not everyone has these exact experiences.
Right.
Not everybody has three brothers, especially three brothers who, you know, passed in the way that they passed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's even more broad than that. It's about struggling with your expectations, whether it's your dad or your boss or whatever or whoever. It's about just general relationships, like the brothers. Everybody has certain people who they just connect with and who are their people, and that's what the Von Erich brothers were. Everybody wants to succeed to some degree, whether it's at your job or not, or if it's, you know, doing other things, being a parent, being whatever. Like everybody has goals that they want to strive for. And I think that this movie did a great job of sort of showing that through the context of the Von Erich family. And that when it comes to the other awards contenders, I thought this was a pretty good year. But I would have nominated Iron Claw in my top 10 for sure, at least for Best Picture. And like I said, Efron actor, you got a couple options for supporting actor, Maura Tierney for supporting actress, screenplay. Like I think original song, it could have been a contender in a lot of these areas.
I agree. My last question is, what was your favorite performance in this movie?
It's tough. Maura Tierney's great. I don't know if she had enough time.
Yeah.
For her to be my number one favorite. I think it's gotta be Efron.
He was so good. He's mine.
I just said this in the car earlier. Not that I thought he's a bad actor. I think he's a good actor for what he does. I think he's good in like, you know, sort of like bro comedy movies. He was, you know, High School Musical, of course. Greatest Showman, of course.
17 Again.
Of course. I didn't know he had this in him.
Yeah, wow.
You know? This is a character that is... There's a lot going on in this character. From a sort of anger perspective, from a repression perspective, from a fun perspective, from a being a good dad and a good husband perspective. Like, there's a lot in the Kevin Von Erich character in this movie. And I thought he knocked it out of the park. And I will give an honorable mention to Holt McCallany, because him as Fritz, he was so awful. But in the same way that we've talked about in the past, like, when his light shines on you, like, he has that sort of personality where you feel like you're the entire world. And that was exactly what happened when he chose David to get the title shot over Kevin. Like, Kevin and Carrie were both upset. And David, while he understood their perspective, was super pumped. Like, he was like, oh, thanks, Dad. This is great. I'm going to do my best. It's going to be awesome. And, like, when you're chosen, when you're at the top of that ranking, like, Holt McCallany's performance in this movie makes you believe that Fritz really, really does want the best for David, when in reality, it's really about himself. It's very Logan Roy.
Yeah.
Succession.
Yeah.
But he's kind of genial at times.
Yeah.
And he's not always overbearing and cutting and brutal in that way. He often does it with a nice face and by pitting one against the other.
Right.
And I just thought that he was amazing.
I also think Harris Dickinson was great, too.
He was.
If you see him in Triangle of Sadness, this is a very different role.
Much different.
And he is very lovable in it. You can see that he takes on the kind of older brother role to Mike really well. He's very protective of Mike. And he also is just seems like a very nice, sweet character that you get to know without him having a ton of screen time.
And he's one of the ones that wrestling fans nationally didn't really get to know, because he died so young and so, like, before he was, like, on the verge of becoming a star, but he right. never actually did.
Yeah. Those are my questions.
What do I got here? Let's see. I don't have all that much. What'd you think of, like, the costumes and the makeup and the hair and all that?
I liked it. I think that it fits with the 80s. It's the early 80s. What do you want?
I just saw people that were like, I mean, I, every time,
like,
I
looked, Zac Efron's got that haircut the whole movie.
Every time I looked at Jeremy Allen White, I was like, I can't do this.
I know. The haircuts are a lot, but.
But if you look at pictures of the Von Erichs, they were pretty close.
Yeah.
What about the soundtrack? There's a lot of great music in this movie.
I love that. I always like a soundtrack that is very, has a point of view, is very time period based.
Yeah.
And I think that it also hit the nail on the head when it comes to the type of music you'd expect from wrestling
shows.
At that time.
Yeah, I'm looking at the soundtrack now. You get Don't Do Me Like That.
Yeah, great.
Tom Petty. You get
That was a great scene.
You get Don't Fear the Reaper, Blue Oyster Cult, Gambling Man by Eddie Money, Tom Sawyer, of course. John Denver was the song they danced to, Thank God I'm a Country Boy.
Yeah,
at the wedding.
And I think that a lot of those are in that first half where you get that kind of electricity and that excitement and the happiness of
the
family.
Which is what a wrestling show is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you go see a show.
Yeah.
I think if this is in chronological order, there's only four songs after that.
Makes sense.
And one of them is Live That Way Forever.
Right.
I thought it was great too, for the same exact reasons. It's that exact type of Texas boy kind of, like, music that, and Rush, which has an actual, like, real life connection to them. But
yeah.
Rush isn't exactly who I would think of when I would be like, all right, what's Dallas, Texas music? Not quite Rush, but I totally agree on the soundtrack. And then we kind of talked about my other questions. I was going to ask about the performance and the portrayal of wrestling. I have one. I don't have much trivia, but the one that I did find was a tweet, and it said, The Iron Claw isn't the only movie where the Von Erichs were involved.
Mm.
So the movie Problem Child in 1990.
Yeah, John Travolta.
Yeah, the real Cary Von Erich was in it.
Oh, really?
3 years before he died. And he was in a scene with Michael Richards, who was on his second year as Kramer on Seinfeld.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's really my only trivia. The rest of the trivia is like, oh, you know, Chavo Guerrero Jr. did the wrestling stunts, which is like, he did it for GLOW. He does it for Heels, I think, or did it for Heels, the show on Showtime. He's like the go-to guy for like wrestling choreography. And he is involved in the Guerrero family, which is another long-standing wrestling family. Of course, Eddie Guerrero, who
with tragedy in it.
Tragically died at 38, I think, in his hotel room. That family isn't quite as stricken with tragedy as this one is, though, of course, Eddie was a bigger star than any of the Von Erichs were, mm-hmm. and nationally, you know. That was a moment where it was like, I cried. I was 13 years old.
That's all right. You're allowed to cry.
No, not in this movie.
At the end, he says yes.
Yeah. But yeah, so there's stories like this all around the wrestling business. Not necessarily quite as tragic, but there are a lot of tragedies. Mm-hmm. And that's why Dark Side of the Ring, where we talked about, like, that's a whole series on bad things that happened in the wrestling business.
And I'm sure there are quite a few other stories that maybe just haven't gotten to the public eye yet.
And some that recently have that are, I'm sure there will be Dark Side of the Ring type coverage of in the future.
Yeah. And hopefully it shines a light on all of the terrible things.
Absolutely. And this is a movie. This is a story where it's not necessarily like, of course, we're referencing Vince McMahon's allegations.
Right.
This isn't a story that is like that despicable. Like what Fritz does is bad. He's not a good person.
Right.
And but what's happening in this story is unchecked mental illness and just things that are not properly addressed by a good family.
Lack of communication. A lack of allowance of emotion and vulnerability. Right. Those expectations that are put on these boys.
Right. It's not like necessarily as despicable as some of the other stuff that.
Oh, it's not. No, not at all. This is instead more of a like sad, tragic.
Right.
I don't think I've ever heard a family story that is more.
Yeah.
Steeped in so many separate incidents of tragedy. Of course, there's instance where whole families are very, very like negatively affected because of an event. This is like every year something happened.
Well, and one of the reasons for that is it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like when Kerry's on the phone with Kevin, he's saying like, I can't escape the curse. Like,
yeah.
You know, like it's in their heads at that point. And it's then terrible. They, you know, he chose to, you know, die by suicide. And like, that was not, it could have been avoided. By, like you said, communication, connection, and just a loving family that wasn't quite there. He was all kind of mentally gone by that point, but like throughout his life,
mm-hmm.
you know, there was no support from his parents in the way that might have saved him.
Yeah, we'll never know.
Yeah. So I think that's all I got on the Iron Claw. Does the Iron Claw make Baby's First Watch List?
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons. I would agree.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? When would we show this?
Not till high school, definitely.
Yeah.
Probably late high school.
Yeah.
Would be my guess. Although I will say, like, kids like things earlier than that, and if you're a rabbit hole Wikipedia user, like I was in middle school and stuff, I didn't find this story, but I've read a lot of crazy stuff. Like, who knows if they'll be interested in this, if they like wrestling, if they like film before then.
They're big Zac Efron fans.
Who isn't?
Exactly.
Then maybe a little bit sooner. I didn't find it to be particular. There's a couple of, you know, ooh, little things in there. But it's not exactly the most vulgar movie or anything like that.
No, it is dark, both, of course, like from a perspective of the content and also from lighting. Like, it's not a very light movie.
Right.
Especially a lot of the wrestling scenes are kind of like dark and dingy.
Yeah.
But so I don't know. It would depend on what sort of catches our son's eyes
mm-hmm.
in terms of like literally visually. Mm-hmm. They might not be interested in something that is so like you got to be locked in and you got to be like paying attention and you got to be, you know, you're not going to get. It's not exactly eye candy, this movie. So I think that would probably play a part in it, too. But I definitely think it's one, especially if our kids are interested in performances
yeah.
And sort of the way families are portrayed. And hopefully, A very different family from from their future experiences.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'm not going to have six kids, that's for sure.
Yeah, so definitely for sure this gets on Baby's First Watch List, along with other movies like that we haven't covered yet, like The Wrestler, yeah, which we will get to, and shows like Glow, which we liked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think wrestling is such a great context for movies that I think is a little bit untapped. We've gotten more the last few years, really since The Wrestler.
Yep.
But I still think that there's untapped potential in that form. Yeah, so you can take a breath now. Now that we're done talking about all this super heavy stuff, we're going to bounce back next week. We're going to go with 10 Things I Hate About You.
Have you ever seen it?
I've not seen it.
It's really good.
Of course, we got to talk Heath Ledger, which is depressing, but I'm excited for it. I haven't... Never would have been on my radar.
It's Shakespeare.
I know. It's Taming of the Shrew.
Yep.
I never would have watched it, but now I'm going to.
You're going to like it, I think.
Even if I don't like Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Yeah.
If I don't think Julia Stiles is the best actress in the world?
Yeah. Okay. It's because Heath Ledger's so good.
Yeah.
And it's just fun. It's just soapy fun.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, yeah. So I'm excited for that. Yeah, this was the Iron Claw. This was a lot.
I thought that was good. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the movie's a lot.
Oh, yeah, but it's great.
Yeah, so
worth a watch.
Absolutely. Check us out on Instagram and all that. We're gonna have clips. We're still putting out clips. We're doing clips every four times a week. So follow us there if you're not already. Same with TikTok, YouTube. It's up on all those, whatever your preferred social media is. And then thanks for listening. And then next week we will be back for 10 Things I Hate About You.
Okay. Goodbye.
See you later.